Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's here on the program, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape, trees and shrubs and flowers and things you can eat and houseplants too. They could be included, any and all of those sorts of things. If you have questions, you certainly are welcome to give us a call. I'm sure people are now, in a day like this, with the weather that we're going to have, I'm sure that people are starting to think about what they're going to plant this year. Maybe there is some problem that's still holding over from last year that you never really quite solved that you need some advice on. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
And people will remember 1 month ago today, you were snowed in at your house. We did it with you telephone, and we got 14 inches of snow. And then today, we're looking at a high of 77 1 month later. So that just shows you, particularly in the springtime, that you can have anything. And I guess over the next couple of weeks, at least, we're going to be bouncing back and forth between maybe a little warmer than average and maybe even cooler than average. So one day to the next, we don't know what it's going to be.
But at least it gives us hope, right?
We have a few
warm days. You feel like it's going to happen eventually.
Well, at our house, we've got snowdrops. That are up.
Oh, yeah, that are coming up.
And,
great plant.
And they're even daffodils that are up.
That are starting to come.
They're maybe up even out of the ground a couple of inches. So things are definitely starting to wake up.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
All right. We have some callers are starting to come in. So we'll talk with them. And we'll start out with somebody here, I think, on our toll-free line in Mattoon, line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hi.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I wondered if Sandy had any thoughts on or what she would recommend for. I'd like to put some small shrubs, in my flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, I've got a vine, one of those summer clematis, that late one, and I have a butterfly bush, and I have a small rose bush. But I'd like to have something else.
Okay. How wide is the bed? Is it fairly wide?
Well, it's about 12 feet. No, it's not large. About 12 feet wide and about 20 feet long.
Oh,
and it gets
that's pretty
full
good size.
Sun. It gets full sun.
Well, that gives you all kinds of things. And I guess I'm glad you're mentioning this because I think a lot of times we forget we can put shrubs in the flower garden. And actually, it helps because a lot of the shrubs are low maintenance. So it's kind of a nice way to add some low maintenance to your garden. There are many, many, many shrubs out there. Actually, some of them that I think work out particularly nice are the spireas, like gold flame. And there's a lot of the pink spireas. They're really easy to grow. They flower, usually pink or white flowers, really pretty. And you can get some smaller ones. You don't have to get the giant bridal veil, which you certainly could.
No,
but
I've got one of those over in another corner of the yard, but I don't really, you know what I'm talking about.
Right. But these would be the pink ones that we're talking more like 3 feet.
And some foliage maybe that's interesting.
Right, and like gold flame spire is a really nice one because it has some different coloration on the foliage, kind of yellow, kind of reddish foliage on it, which is nice. Even things like barberries, I don't know how you feel about the purple barberries.
All the time on barberries.
Pardon?
They're so stickery.
Yeah, which is that would be another one. Certainly, smoke bushes. Are you familiar with smoke bushes?
Yes, I am. The one I had got awfully big.
Well, I tell you one of the things that, and actually a good place to go is our Idea Garden. If you ever get a chance to go there, one of the things that the master gardeners do, because we have shrubs in our border, and one of the things that they do is they actually prune them heavily every spring. And a smoke bush does very well that way. So like every spring, you just chop it back. And
what do you think about witch hazel? Are there any witch hazels that would be suitable for in a garden or not?
Sure. Now, some of them get a little bigger. So you might want to really look and see which ones. But they're wonderful and they have those odd flower times, either really late in the season, November, or very early in the season, like right now.
Yeah.
They're already blooming. They're actually blooming in February. Yeah. So it's nice to add. Now, some of those get a little big, and you have to really pay attention. Yeah, you'd have to pay attention on when you're pruning them, so to make sure you don't prune off the flower buds. But you could certainly also keep those smaller in it. So you really can do that with a lot of the different shrubs and find it works out well. Viburnums are another one. one that, again, you'd want to look for some of the smaller ones, but some of them have, some, like Korean spice has a wonderful fragrance
yes,
to it.
Yes, I have one in a separate spot, but and that would be a good
one. Right, and there's Birkwood Viburnum, which is another nice one.
What was that?
Birkwood.
Birk, okay.
Yeah, Birkwood, and it's another very fragrant one, but it has a very glossy leaf as opposed to that kind of
a
dull leaf.
A nice change.
Yeah,
Birkwood.
Birkwood.
B-E-R or B-U-R?
B-U-R-K-W-O-O-D, Birkwood. So very nice and does get a nice fall color, and actually it's almost semi-evergreen. They actually hang on to its leaf for a long time, so it's very pretty.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So I'd look at a lot of the smaller shrubs and even things like potentillas, you know, the common ones, boxwood. There's a lot of them that actually do very well in flower gardens.
Do you think spring planting would be okay, or should I wait till fall?
No, I think spring planting's great. This is a great time to be thinking about it right now, and the month of April is a super time to be thinking about planting, so you're right in the money here.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Sure, good luck.
Thanks for the call. I think a couple of years ago, I talked to someone that you had coming in advance of I think it was probably for the Garden Day, someone who had written a lot of books, and I'm afraid now I'm blanking on the woman's name, but she had an entire book that I think was about incorporating shrubs into your, how to mix those in with other kinds of plants.
Right. That's probably was a Tracy DeSabato Oss.
Yes, yes.
She has a great book on designing and how to use, you know, the shrubs and actually a lot of different plants. She has a great design book. And she actually talks a lot about, you know, how to prune them. And it doesn't take a lot of pruning, but just to do some of those smaller ones to actually prune them back every year. They look better. They don't get as big. Often they'll flower better. You get better foliage color. So sometimes we just sort of treat maybe some of the bigger shrubs differently, or even some of the trees differently. Out at the Idea Garden, actually, the Master Gardeners, we have a catalpa tree, which is, you know, a large tree, but they actually do something called pollarding, which is common in Europe, but not very common here. And actually, you just keep pruning it back to about the same point every year. Mm-hmm. And so it gets a big, large trunk, large branches, but then it stays small. So it's kind of, if anybody's around in this area and you go out on Route 10, that the helmet tree. Are you familiar with the helmet tree?
The helmet? No, I am not.
You're not familiar with
the helmet tree?
Now, anybody who's been around here for a number of years will know if you go west on Route 10 outside of Champaign, there's the helmet tree. And it, for years and years and years, they've been pruning it back so it stays underneath the power lines. And it looks like a helmet. That's the reason it's called the helmet tree.
Well, I figured that probably was, I guess.
You'll have to take a trip. I don't think it's on any tourism bureau, you know, like pamphlet or anything, but it's pretty cool. But that's just one method of, you know, being able to use larger trees, but yet, you know, just maintaining them so that you can have them in smaller spaces.
Okay, well, you have to put together a list of horticultural oddities.
I have all kinds of oddities. You need to check out the giant Osage orange, and we'll have to do that sometime. We'll have to do a little trip around town.
Let's. In the meantime, let's talk to someone in Paris. Line number two. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi there.
Hello. I'm a master gardener from Paris.
Hey.
And had a customer here a while back that had a question about dwarf trees. She had planted these trees probably 15 years ago, if that long. But they were supposed to be dwarf, and they're 20 feet tall plus in some cases. How do you guarantee that you are getting a dwarf tree when you order a tree? Because she said when they ordered these trees years ago, they were dwarfs. And so, I said, well, it looked like a semi-dwarf to me.
So what kind of trees are these again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear what the...
They were apple trees.
Oh, apple trees. Oh, okay. Well, dwarf is an interesting concept, and it's really relative to what the straight species or what the regular one is. So they are dwarf or probably semi-dwarf, probably what she probably end up having. But they are dwarf in comparison to a, you know, just a plain old apple tree, which can easily get 40, 45 feet tall.
That's what I tell
them. So a 20-foot tree then is dwarf compared to a 45, 50-foot tree. So that's it's a good point. It's one of those things that you really have to read, you know, really don't just go by the word dwarf. Really read up on the plants. And I think the other thing is, you know, trees can really vary tremendously on because of where they're growing. And if they're really in good conditions, growing well, they're going to reach their maximum maybe faster or maybe go beyond that just because they're growing so well. So it's always just kind of a range. But it's not uncommon for a semi-dwarf, certainly for a semi-dwarf to get 20 feet, 25 feet tall.
Because it got so big, and I, you know, she was asking me, and I'm like, I don't really know. And when I going to be on the program today. I thought, that'd be a great question.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen dwarfs to 15, you know, probably reaching 20 feet, even a dwarf tree. But again, it's relative to what they are. So, but apples need to be pruned every year anyway. So they do need to, you know, even on the dwarfs, they still need to have some pruning. But yeah, you're right. That's not much fun when you're expecting to be able to stand on the ground and pick your apples. It's not much fun thinking about that.
With an elderly lady on top of that, you know. I just can't climb trees like I used to. So.
Yeah. Hey, good for
you. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay,
all
sure.
All right, thanks for the call. Our guest this morning on Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here on the program, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. So whatever questions you might have, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We have some time here. We don't have any callers right at the moment. There's some events maybe you might just like to mention?
Sure. We actually have something going on today at 1 o'clock as well as March 15th at 7 o'clock. And these are our Telenet series. I think I've mentioned these before. And these are given throughout the state. So if you're near or, you know, every county has a U of I Extension office associated with it. So check your local Extension office to see if they're offering this particular program. This is actually one called Aggressive Thugs in the Flower Garden. So this is kind of knowing, you know, there are some plants, of course, in the catalogs, they usually list them as vigorous growers. You should always pay attention to that because that usually means that they're maybe a little bit aggressive. So Martha Smith, one of our educators, is going to be talking about the plants to sort of look out for, maybe how you can use them effectively, that kind of thing. So today at 1 o'clock, and then the same program is repeated then March 15th, Thursday at 7 o'clock. So you can sort of check those programs, but check with your local Extension office. You may find they are offering those besides here in Champaign County. Also on March 24th, there's actually a couple events going on. Decatur, the Macon County Master Gardeners, are having their Potpourri of Gardening. And they've been doing this for a number of years where they have a number of different programs. Diane Nolan, you know, from Illinois Gardener, is going to be doing a floral design to music. I've seen her do that a number of times, and that's pretty cool. And everything from home vegetable gardening to how to make your own bath salts to wildlife gardening. So that's pretty fun. That's going to be in Decatur on March 24th from 8:15 to noon. And people can call 877-6042 to find out more info about that. And the Illinois Prairie Hosta Society is also having a program, their annual meeting that particular day, March 24th, from 8 to 12 at the Champaign County Extension Auditorium in our offices there, and the Champaign County Master Gardeners are helping to host that. And so it's a great program in the morning. From not only do they just talk about hostas, but also they're going to be talking about some of these really unique plants that we're seeing more and more that are called, you know, they're kind of the jack in the pulpits. It might be one that people might know, but there's a lot of new ones out there now that are very interesting, great foliage. And so they're going to have actually a couple people from Indianapolis talking that morning. So that's the Illinois Prairie Hosta Society, March 24th. In the morning.
All right.
People
very good.
Just come to that.
Well, and again, questions are welcome. If you'd like to call in here, talk with Sandy, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let me just pass on a little bit of news to you of local interest, and I'm sure that we'll have more on this throughout the day. The University of Illinois Board of Trustees has voted to ratify, quote, the end of the Chief Illiniwek tradition, unquote, approving a resolution that ends the halftime performances and directs the Chancellor, Richard Herman, to determine the fate of the chief logo and name. That vote was nearly unanimous. Only Trustee David Duras dissented. He delivered a lengthy explanation of his vote, and we will have details in our local regional newscast coming up at 12:30. The trustees are currently considering another resolution that would have the university join two former chiefs in a lawsuit against the NCAA. Again, we'll have more details on this as part of our regional newscast at 12:30 as part of the afternoon magazine. Here on Focus 580, we're inviting you questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason's here, and I know she'll do her best to give you an answer. We have several callers, and we'll get right back to it with someone in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hello, Sandy. Mm-hmm. I have a question about reducing two shrubs in my garden. One is a Caryopteris. Mm-hmm. I think I've got the right name, a little blue flower.
Sure.
And it's very vigorous and has gotten, I feel, too large. And I'd like to kind of reduce it in half and wonder if this is a good time to do it. And how far down I should take it, given new growth for the coming season. And the other are Deutzia, and they're also getting kind of big.
Well, the caryopsis, sometimes it's also called blue spirea. Some people may know it by that particular name. And actually, it's considered one of those things that's called a sub-shrub.
A sub-shrub.
It actually does get, go figure. It actually does get, can get fairly large. I probably wouldn't prune it right now. Normally, it's one of those, for a lot of the sub-shrubs, we actually wait until they start to produce a little bit of leaf.
Oh, okay.
And so you can kind of see, how they're going to leaf out. Because sometimes, depending on how cold it is, those guys can actually really do a lot of, the winter can actually really do a number on them.
Oh.
So sometimes they actually will die back quite a bit. So sometimes it's a good idea to just sort of wait until they kind of start to pop out a little bit. And you can see, what's dead, what's not. And then from there, you can do pretty heavy pruning. And I've certainly pruned them back. I didn't prune it back to the, really woody, trunk. But I left a few inches on each one of the stems. So I did a pretty heavy pruning. And actually, they look better, to be honest with you. They actually do much better. The Deucea would be one of those that I would actually wait. And you can, it's another one of those you can certainly prune. I'd wait until after it flowers.
Okay.
And then go ahead and you can do a pretty heavy prune on it, too.
Okay, and so, take out the old wood.
Yeah, and then just take out the old wood and kind of encourage, because it's another one that actually blooms much better if you get some of that older stuff out of there.
Yeah, some of it's look, the old wood just looks old.
Yeah, it's time to get that out of there, and you'll find it will really invigorate the shrub, but I'd wait until after it flowers.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Generally speaking, now are we at the time you can start to think about pruning trees and shrubs?
Sure.
With the qualification that in some cases I know, and I guess I've never, it may vary from plant to plant, that you do want to, some things you want to wait until after they have flowered to do that.
Yeah, if they bloom, especially if they bloom really early, those are ones that bloom on old wood, as in the wood that's produced. So they already have their flower buds right now. So if you do a lot of pruning right now, you're going to lose the flower buds, which isn't, it's not going to kill the plant necessarily, but you're going to lose the flowers, which is the fun part. So that would be things like lilacs, forsythia. And generally, we talk about things, anything that blooms before about mid-June, those are often blooming on old wood.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's early, early May, somewhere in there, bloomer, it's a good idea just to wait and prune them after they flower.
Okay.
So that's just kind of thing. But most of the other things, you can certainly start pruning now. And even with a lot of our, this is certainly the time to be thinking about pruning grapes and a lot of the other kind of fruit plants as well.
Okay. Next, let's talk with someone in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Good morning. What can you tell me about wahoos? A friend sent me a picture of some that were, I don't think they were blooming. I think they had seed pods on them. And they were absolutely gorgeous, but I don't know. They look good, but often things that look good have, serious problems. Do they grow well here? How big are they?
Sure. Well, I don't know which one. There actually is a couple of them. There actually is a native wahoo called the Eastern Wahoo. It's not always easy. Don't you like the Eastern Wahoo?
Eastern Wahoo.
Who came up with that name? Wahoo.
You probably looked at those gorgeous fruits.
Yeah, they actually do have beautiful kind of pinkish, reddish seed pod looking things on them, which are just beautiful. And they do have a nice fall color. Generally, the wild one tends to be a little bit on the pink side. But you may be familiar with this, as at least the non-native one is called burning bush. I mean, that's the shrub that we have all over the place is burning bush, and it's the non-native relative to the Eastern Wahoo.
Oh.
So they certainly grow around here, you know, the non-native as well as the native. Sometimes a native one's hard to find, in the trade. So I don't know where this person had. Often you can actually dig them up. Sometimes they'll sucker up, and I don't know if this friend, how good a friend they are. Maybe they were willing to share their part of their Eastern Wahoo with you.
Is there a place called Kickapoo Nursery? Maybe is it Kickapoo in Downs?
I think
and
so.
And my guess is that's probably where it came from.
Oh, okay, okay.
This is just in, Leroy Aerosmith area.
Sure, and I think I had heard that particular person, I can't remember his name, was doing a lot of natives, sassafras and ones that we don't often see in the trade.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
So it's a great plant. It's an interesting plant. It will get a little tall. I mean, it's one of those that, easily it'll probably get 10 feet if you let it go.
Not much bigger than that.
Pardon?
Not much bigger than
no,
that.
No, they're really, it's a shrub for the most part.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, they're pretty much a shrub. And normally you would find them, actually there's native ones. Supposedly the state one, this is probably more information you'd ever want to know, but the state champion Eastern Wahoo is at Allerton Park, but we can't quite figure out where it is, but that's where it's listed. So if that tells you anything, you can go on an Eastern Wahoo hike and try to find it at Allerton Park. But they're certainly native and certainly could be found around here.
Cool. That's hard to grow. Are they noxious? Do they creep? Do they... Have bad habits?
Well, the native one is just fine. Mm-hmm. There's certainly been issues with the non-native one is actually reseeding into native areas. So it's in some areas it's kind of turned into a noxious weed, and that's the compact burning bush, the one that you see in the trade the most often. And that one has become a problem in some areas. The native one, as far as I know, doesn't really have any issues. It doesn't get the bright red fall color. It gets kind of a pinky fall color, but it's very pretty. Yeah, not quite, but it's very pretty, very attractive plant, and I could easily see it, you know, if you have like a shrub border or, you know, and it does take shade, because normally it would be found in more of a woodland area.
I think I'm off to Downs then.
Off to Downs, all right.
All right, thank you so
shopping
much.
Trip.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm looking at one right here, and it looks, and this must be a picture of what it looks like in the fall, because it has a very red, sort of pinkish red foliage, and it looks like it's a pretty good size tree, and it also looks like it's an understory tree, it looks like, so it probably would be okay.
Sure.
You wouldn't have to have absolute first full sun.
All
this actually does look like it's sort of hard to tell from this photo. It looks like it, though, it's fairly tall.
I don't know. What are they listing it at?
This one here. Well,
it might get up to 15. I don't know. But I don't think it gets much more than that.
Huh.
But it's one of those things that a lot of our native shrubs actually might be in more woodland areas, but you can grow them in the sun. But they have a little different look to them in the sun. You know, they often get they're more dense than they are in the shade. So they just look different, but they'll certainly grow in shade or sun.
Okay. And it is a euanimus,
I guess.
So it's a member
euanimus,
of that same group.
It's the same... Yeah. You know, same genus, it's just a little different species than the one we traditionally think of.
All right. Well, let's go on here. We'll talk next with someone in Milwaukee. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning. Are you acquainted with a vegetable green called Malabar spinach?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I've never eaten it.
Well, I haven't either.
I just know of it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I haven't either, but someone gave me a package of it, and... I didn't have a chance to ask them a question, and I only read the package after that, and it says something quite confusing. It says to grow, a temperature of 85 degrees must be maintained. I have to assume that's some kind of an error. They must be talking about seed germination or something like that. Do you know?
Well, it's actually one of the reasons why it's popular is that, you know, spinach itself, just plain old spinach, does very poorly in hot weather.
Right.
And this is supposed to be kind of that substitute, where you can use it in the same way as spinach. But so it is definitely a warm weather plant. 85 seems a little high to me, but it's definitely a warm weather plant as opposed to cool weather plant like we think of as spinach.
Right.
So it's not one that you'd be planting now, in other words. You'd be waiting until the soil temperatures warm up, May. Mm.
Well, I mean, I don't know about southern Illinois, but Milwaukee, we don't maintain daytime temperatures of 85 degrees, let alone nighttime temperatures.
Yeah.
So would you suggest I not grow it in zone 5?
Well, I think probably what I would do is I'd probably go ahead and start some plants indoors, because you don't really need a whole lot of it, to be honest with you. And I would just start a few plants indoors where you can regulate the heat better, and you know, start them in warm soil that way. And then when it's time, May, you know, middle of May or so, then you can get them out there right away. And then they have a little bit of head start. And then I think you'll be all right. I assume you have full sun and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'll be all right once you reach that point.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good.
It's one of those things, sometimes they just don't grow as fast or, you know, but it's fine. I've never tried it, though. We grew it at the Idea Garden one year, and I never got around to trying it.
So probably in the summertime, even in Milwaukee, it wouldn't get so cool at night that it would hurt the plant.
No, I wouldn't think so. It would just be probably slow to get established. That's why I think it's definitely probably one of those I'd start indoors first.
Okay. Next, we will talk with someone in Chicago. Line 3. Hello.
Good morning. I got a rubber plant that loses leaves on the bottom, brought home from the supermarket. Is that the breed, or am I doing something wrong?
And what kind of plant is it again?
It's a rubber plant.
Oh, okay. And it's just getting really, is it really tall at this point? Or?
Well, it's about 2 feet, but the bottom leaves keep falling off.
Yeah. In some respects, that's kind of the nature of the beast, to be honest with you. Especially unless it's a dwarf one, we're back to that dwarf one, more compact one, because there's a few different ones that actually tend to stay a little shorter and more compact. But if it's just the plain old rubber plant, it wants to be a tree. I mean, it's what it's trying to do. And as with all trees, for the most part, you know, they start to lose those lower leaves. So I think that's probably what you're seeing. I assume it's not drying out too much or anything like those lines that might be causing other issues with it.
Do you have an opinion of plants from the supermarket?
Do I have an opinion of plants in the supermarket?
Yeah, are they quality or so-so?
Just between you and me? Oh, no. I think, you know, you always have to look at the plant and just look at the quality, all those kinds of things. You certainly can get some. And I've certainly purchased plants from the supermarket. If you're wanting certain, you know, certain varieties or certain cultivars or whatever, you're going to have to go beyond supermarkets or even the box stores. So it really is a matter of, you know, I think the other thing that's kind of nice, and I guess it depends on your supermarket, is, you know, when you go to the garden center or someplace, if you can develop a relationship with some of the folks there, then if you have a problem with the plant, like with your rubber plant, here, you have a problem with it, and then you can call them up and say, you know, I bought this plant and it's just, you know, not doing very well. What am I doing wrong? And so then you kind of, you know, you have that relationship with them. So if there truly is a problem with the plant, then maybe, you know, they might give you another one or give you some credit, whereas you may not find that with a supermarket. Other, you know, some supermarkets may be like that, but I'm just not familiar with any of them.
They seem to be just clerks.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, they're doing a lot of the folks that do the, you know, they do produce as well as the foliage plants and stuff. So sometimes it isn't necessarily, you know, maybe their strong suit. So
do you have an opinion on clay pots against the plastic pots with the saucer? Is there a difference?
You know, part of it is just personal preference. If you have plants that truly need to dry out in between watering, like say you have cactuses or, you know, any of the succulents, sedums or any of those, I think they do better in clay pots because the clay pots tend to be more porous. And so they don't stay wet for so long. If you have a plant that really needs to have wet soil, you know, or really moist soil, you may find it does better in a plastic pot.
The mother-in-law's tongue, does that need moist soil?
They really like to be on the dry side.
Oh, they do.
So usually terracotta is just fine for them, or just make sure you don't overwater them. So it's one of those things, especially if you tend to overwater stuff, you might find you have better luck in the terracotta pots.
Right.
Yeah, but they're getting harder to find, to be honest with you.
How about the new windows with all these new designed glass with the gas in between and other types of glass? Will they affect the plant in the sun?
You know, I've talked to a couple of people about that, and the feeling is, you know, if you were truly a competitive, you know, really wanted the best growth, it's not something you'd put around your greenhouse. In other words, you're not going to use that kind of glass around a greenhouse because it doesn't maximize the amount of sun, especially in the winter time when we're really trying to do that. So you may find a difference, you know, with some of them, but from what I've talked to people, they still feel like you can certainly grow plants indoors. It's not that you can't grow them. It's just you may find they may not grow as fast, or, you know, there may be some other issues there, especially in the winter time, maybe when you're not getting quite as much light. So
they don't, the ultraviolet light, does that get through, or is that what the plant needs?
Well, the plant needs kind of the whole spectrum.
Oh, I see.
You know, not just ultraviolet, kind of the whole spectrum. And again, it's going to depend on the plant. You know, on you know, whether it's a flowering plant, all those kinds of things. So you may find that, you know, by changing out your windows, that plant that you always had there maybe doesn't do as well.
That's it.
You're just going to have to play around with it. But you still should be able to grow plants. So
I'm facing north, so I don't have much luck with the sun. So
yeah, probably not. You may find you need a little supplemental lighting or something like that periodically, especially
that
in the wintertime.
That wouldn't be like a regular light. That's a kind of a special bulb.
It doesn't have to be. Actually, you could certainly use even, you know, the fluorescent bulbs now. You can get them in just about any size. So even something along those lines is just fine. I mean, it really does help them to have that little extra light.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Other questions are welcome. Our guest this morning is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here. We talk about taking care of growing things in the home landscape. If you have questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Someone wanted to know if you could just really quickly recap the events and programs that you talked about before.
Okay. I just have the telenets that are going on today, actually at 1 o'clock today, and then also March 15th at 7 o'clock is the Aggressive Thugs in the Flower Garden. And that's the program that's given throughout the state. So just check with your local county extension office and see if they're offering that particular program.
So you would
for
need
you.
To go to your local right. extension
office. You just go to your local extension okay. office, and then, so you don't have to, so it's live, it's given live, but it's through the telephone system, and then we show the, we actually have the program and stuff right there. So you've mm-hmm. seen the program, but actually hearing the person live. So that's always fun, and you don't have to drive as far to actually see that program. So that's coming up. And then on March 24th is the Potpourri of Gardening. That's the Macon County Master Gardeners over in Decatur. They're having their program. It's any number of things from wildlife gardening to vegetable gardening to Diane Nolan's doing her design with music. And then also the Illinois Prairie Hosta Society is having their annual meeting on March 24th at the Champaign County Extension Office from 8 to 12.
Okay. And that's an amazing plant. I know there's some people
hostas,
who are down
yeah,
on hostas, yeah. but if you've ever, for example, I think it was just last summer on the garden walk that we had here in Champaign-Urbana, I recall going to someone's house that had the most amazing hostas I ever saw in my life.
The giant,
yes, they had some of these giant hostas. Yeah, it looked like something out of a science fiction movie. They were almost that big and with really beautiful plants and tremendous variety in terms of size and actually a lot of variety in terms of color and the kind of markings on the plant. They're really remarkable. And probably some of these things that they maybe think that you can order, but it may also be that you just have to find somebody who's got one I'm sure the folks trade back and forth.
That's why it's so nice to get involved in a group like the Illinois Prairie Hosta Society, is that you learn so much from everybody else, but then also, you know, that little trading, you find out what grows well, you get just familiar with so many different, plus they don't just talk about hostas. Actually, with this particular program, they're actually going to talk about some other unusual plants, the jack in the pulpit kind of the whole genus and some of those unusual plants that are coming out. So they do talk about other plants. And certainly if you have a shady garden, this would be a great group to think about too.
All right. Well, we've got some other callers here, and we will go next to Champaign, I believe, in line one. Hello.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Sandy, I have a 30 by 70 foot or so area that is shaded by sugar maple and dolgo crabs along the under the power line.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I've sort of let it go wild, but, you know, you have to continually remove tree, whatever. Anyway, and then I have to control weeds that enter in. I'm just wondering, for one thing, how to control that area from weeds that the birds bring in, or creeping Charlie from the yard on one side and the backyard on another side. But I do want to have a few nice plants like hosta and cyclamen. Spring tulips and other spring flowers. So my question is, how do you control the weeds? Do you have a solid fence between neighbors who have creeping Charlie? And then another thing, part of that area is has periwinkle.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that's quite undesirable because of its dense root growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I kill that off so that there will be room for some of these other desirable plants?
Well, I guess you have a number of questions there. I think the one thing about that with like creeping Charlie coming over, truly creeping from the neighbor's yard, you know, you could put a barrier there of some sort. I don't know how that's going to look, but it'd have to be a solid barrier, and it'd have to be probably at least maybe 8 inches tall. So I don't know how, you know, then are people going to trip over it? I don't know. But, you know, there might be something that you could physically, you'd actually put it into the soil. And
well,
it couldn't be just
would that be high enough? Wouldn't the the seeds after flowering
well,
blow over?
It would help. because then it couldn't creep as much.
That's right.
But it's going to have to be tall. You can, in other words, you can't just put in like the bed edging or something like that and expect it to keep the creeping Charlie out, because it won't.
Yeah.
So it has to be something that's, I would say, at least 6 to 8 inches tall. It's going to have to be something that comes up. And again, you may want to really think about that, because then you don't want people tripping over it. So,
well, we do have a fence all around.
Well, then that might be a perfect thing where you actually could even put metal or something where you can actually put it into the soil, and then also have something so it sticks up a little bit. So that would help. And you will see some seeds blow over or whatever, but it'll certainly help it from creeping over, which is going to be your major problem.
Yes.
Underneath maple trees is really hard to grow things.
Well, that's why I've let this area. I have partially a yard and then partially this natural area.
Right, right. So, and I guess with the vinca, the periwinkle, you just feel like it's at least something growing there, but just you really don't like it. And...
No.
Okay.
Well, other things will not grow up
right.
in it.
Which in some respects is good, because you don't have quite the weed problem. I just thought I'd throw that in there, but obviously it's your personal preference on whether you like it or not.
Well, I tried to get it out of a vegetable garden, and my, that was a major operation, even trying to kill it, but you still had to dig up all the roots.
Right, right, right. And you could do, you know, actually probably smothering is probably going to be your best bet with that, actually with black plastic or something, because it really is a tough one to get rid of, to be honest with you. And that's why it's so vigorous, because it just really does well in those kind of conditions. So I guess that's why I'm wondering whether you want to just maybe you just get rid of part of it and then leave part of it, so at least there's no weeds coming up in those areas. So you may find you can go ahead and do that. And then, you know, as far as any number of other plants that you might think about, because you're really going to need to get other plants in there, of course, to make sure that the weeds and stuff don't get established. There are some plants, that, you know, even hostas will do okay. You're going to have to water them periodically because it's such a dry shade.
You're right.
And that's the thing that really is an issue for them. Actually, there's a few things. I don't know if you're familiar with they have a horrible name, but they're actually a really nice plant. They're called dead nettle. It's a terrible name, and it's also called.
No, I don't know it. I know nettle.
Well, it's lamium is a name for them.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a bunch of very nice ones. They have flowers on them. They actually have variegated foliage, and once they get established, they actually do fairly well in dry shade.
Really?
So you may want to find some of those, but with all of these, you're going to have to water them the first year. You know, even though they're drought tolerant, they still need water to get established. And then after that, you may find you may not have to water quite as much. So that would be one plant. And as I said, the hostas, there's other things called barrenwort. These are, I know these are horrible names, but I don't pick them. I don't pick them. I just say them. So barrenwort, it's also called epimedium, is another wonderful, you know, shady, and certainly will take dry shade. So there's a few plants out there that will certainly do well in that area, and that's what you need. Get something in there growing so that you don't have the other things coming in. Does that help?
Yes.
Does that help?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Does.
Good luck. I think you have your work cut out for you.
Oh, I should say so. Well, I've, you know, been trying to control it for years, and I've given up. So
I would go with the showier spots, the spots that you really notice the most, and just start out with those and start a small area and go from there.
What spots did you say?
With the showy spots, as in the spots that you really see. Like when you look out the window, that's the spot I see the most often, or when you walk. And then just worry about that little spot to begin with, and then over time, then you can, rather than just thinking about the huge area all at one time.
Oh, good idea.
Okay,
right.
Good luck.
Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus with Sandy Mason from UofI Extension in Champaign County. We're taking lawn and garden care questions, and I know she'll do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Newman on our line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, I've got several trees, oaks, pin oaks, whatever I planted within the past 10 years, like a 3 to 4 inch trunk, 15, 18 foot tall. Lower branches obviously are starting to get in the way. What is a kind of a rule of thumb for limbing up trees?
As in how far to limb them up, or?
Yes, ma'am. Like height and whatever.
It really depends on whether you're going to be walking under them or mowing under them, I suppose. Usually 5 feet is usually about the minimum. So, but if you have a sidewalk or something like that, you may find you have to you limb them up farther than that. But I wouldn't be too anxious to take the limbs off. They really have found to leave those lower limbs on actually later, you know, leave them on and just assume that in the next few years you'll take them off. In other words, you know, don't be too anxious to take them off.
Most of these have been 5 to 7 years in their body and 3 to 4 inch trunk now and probably 15, 18 foot tall. Just the lower branches are starting to be a hindrance when you're mowing.
When you're mowing, yeah. So you may find, especially with pin oaks, because those lower branches just hang down. So you may find that, yes, you do have to go ahead and take those off. And that one will always be a challenge for you, the pin oaks, just because of the way they grow.
I had a couple aspen. I didn't know about them as well.
I'm sorry.
Aspen sounds like he also has some aspen. You're kind of breaking up on us.
Yes, aspen.
And that would be another one that you're probably going to have to certainly do some pruning on it. It's going to grow faster, and they have a tendency to sucker up quite a bit. But this would be a good time to think about pruning those things, if that was your question.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Let's go to next line number 2, and this is Matt Toon.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
I have a problem with grass under trees in my backyard, and I was considering planting some grass seed this week and maybe throw a little weed and feed on it or whatever, some type of fertilizer. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, you're a little early on, really, on both of those things for the most part, unless you know you have actively growing weeds at this time. As in, if you had, I suppose, if you had henbit or chickweed or something like that, that actually is starting to grow. Because you really want the weeds to be actively growing in order for any, you know, the weed and feed or whatever to work. And generally, we always recommend to wait to fertilize your lawn actually till the 1st of May, which I know sounds late, but the feeling is you have a lot less leaf disease problems if you wait. So you're a little early on things.
Seed?
Pardon?
When should I plant the grass?
April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're really just a little bit early. Actually, especially if you're using Kentucky bluegrass, it really germinates much better in warmer soils, so you have much better luck with that. And I wouldn't really do those two things at the same time, as in seed and then do the weed and feed at the same time, because it really can affect the seed growth as well.
I seem to have a lot of night crawlers in that area, too.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I thought that was supposed to be good.
That's good. We like night crawl. I mean, they're good. It shows you have good soil, and actually they do a nice job aerating the soil. But you may just find, and I assume this area is getting some sun.
Pardon?
Is there any sun there at all?
Well, there's some. It's early, certain part of the day, but not very much.
Right. It sounds like...
Two big trees.
Right. You may find you're just really struggling with the grass just because it's too shady, because even the shade-loving grasses will not grow in 100% shade. They just won't.
I've got some grass seed left over from last year. I wonder if that... Will it be all right to plant?
Yeah, as long as you stored it in a, you know, where it didn't get really cold or, you know, I don't know where you stored it. Hopefully indoors someplace.
Yeah, it was indoors.
Yeah, and that should be fine. You may have a little less germination, but it should still germinate for you. But I would wait, and I would also think about if this is a really, really shady spot, you may think, like we talked to the caller earlier about maybe doing some other plants, simply because it's always going to be a battle for you to try to grow grass underneath really thick shaded trees.
It's been a problem.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. I sort of think my experience with using the grass seed from the year before is that it just doesn't.
You know.
And it's so cheap, I figured, buy.
Depends. Yeah.
Buy fresh seed.
And you're right. You're always going to be better off with fresh seed just because it's that season's seed, which is what it says on the label. So, yeah, you're right. And it's always better, but, you know.
I suppose if you have it, you know.
Yeah.
You can
well, and just to realize you're probably going to have to sow it thicker. You know, than you normally would to take care of that lower germination rate.
Okay, so just this is one of the things that I wanted to ask you. So if you're going to do a weed and feed, maybe around the middle of April is when we're recommending?
Yeah, the trouble with weed and feed, because we're doing an herbicide and a fertilizer at the same time, you end up sort of compromising on when we might do it. So you might do it mid-April. It really kind of depends on what kind of weeds you have and whether they're actively growing. So once the weeds start actively growing, say if you do have dandelions or whatever, you may find you want to do it earlier. Ideally, what we would like to do is to split that up and actually do your herbicide treatment at the correct time and do your fertilizer at the correct time. But then also just think, you know, maybe I don't really need an herbicide. Maybe I just want to fertilize and just try to get my grass growing better so that I don't have weeds coming in later. So sometimes just sort of kind of deciding on really how many weeds you really have and is weed and feed really necessary at that point.
All right. And let's talk with someone in Mahomet, line three. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have deer and I have a shade area that's in real trouble and I have a sunny area where I'd like to have a vine growth. Do you have any suggestions?
Okay, so you have shade, is that what you said? Or you had
my first situation is that I have deer.
Okay.
And then I had periwinkle in the shaded area. They've eaten all that. So I wanted to know first something for the shaded area that the deer wouldn't eat if possible. Mm-hmm. And then I have a place where I had vines and they ate the vines, and that was a sunny area. Any suggestions for either of those?
Yeah, boy. You know, we do have some lists, and right off the top of my head, I don't know. We do have some lists of plants that are less favorable with deer. But always keep in mind that, you know, if you have a high population of deer, sometimes they're even going to eat the less favorable ones. So it doesn't necessarily guarantee things. And I'd be glad to pass that on to you. I think actually Purdue has a pretty good list if you go on the web. And I think New York also has a pretty good list of plants that are not as palatable to deer. You know, boy, right offhand, the only ones I can think of are things like rhododendrons and some of those they don't eat. But other than that, I can't think of any ones that I could really tell you that's going to be an issue. I don't know if you've ever tried any of the repellents, but sometimes that works.
And I'm not going to go there. If you'll give me the website, I'll check it out.
Well, I would just go to either Purdue or New York, Cornell.
www.purdue?
Well, I would just do a search on Purdue.
Oh, okay.
Extension. Probably, okay. I'd just go to Purdue Extension and Cornell Extension.
Okay.
And if you can't find them, just please give me a call and I'll help you find that out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll go to line number one. This is a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Oh, hi. I have four quick questions, but in case I don't get done, what's the extension number I could call?
Our office is 217-333.
Mm-hmm. What is it, 3?
333.
Yes.
7672.
Okay, thanks.
And if anybody, you know, throughout the state or in Purdue, just look at your, usually it's under University of Illinois or under Purdue in the telephone book, or it might be under the county name. So usually you can find it in the telephone book if you're in other areas.
Okay. A first question is about raspberries, mm-hmm. and I haven't cut them, and I'm wondering, should I cut them or just leave them alone?
Are they everbearers?
They are.
Well, everbearers actually, they produce twice on the same cane.
Right.
So they'll actually produce lower down early this season, and then you cut them down. So that same cane produced last year,
uh-huh.
and then it'll produce, that same cane will produce again then, you know, so, later on this summer.
So when should I cut them?
Right after they produce their second crop.
After the second crop.
Yep. Because they actually produce lower down, that
uh-huh.
second one. Now, some people just, you know, mow them off in the fall and they just let them produce once, which you certainly can do with everbearers because sometimes people just find it annoying to try to have to do that. But.
Oh, uh-huh. So I shouldn't touch them now.
So right now, just be cleanup. If you have some, like, really little ones or something like that, you may want to do some cleanup, but
uh-huh.
really just want to wait, unless you know there's some obviously dead ones that you didn't get to last year.
All right. Okay. I have a plant called Weigelia, I think mm-hmm. that's pronounced.
Sure.
And during the winter when there was snow and stuff, some of my neighbors kind of went over on the edge of the dirt, and some of the branches got knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
And will they come back? Or?
Oh, sure. They're really pretty tough. And actually, you know, we were talking earlier, I don't know if you heard that, just talking about different types of plants that you can, you know, shrubs you can put in the border. And actually, Weigelia are a really nice one in that you can easily, you can chop those way back. And
I didn't do that.
Come back.
Are you supposed to do that?
You can do it. Usually, you wait till after they bloom, but you could certainly do it.
I mean, I didn't do it when I first Last year was the first summer I put this.
Which is fine. And normally we probably wouldn't do heavy pruning on the first year because you want them to get established.
Oh, okay.
But then from then on, you actually can do some pretty heavy pruning on those to keep them smaller.
Oh.
So that you could put them in a flower bed. And
well, uh-huh, yeah. okay, I have a rose bush. I don't know if it's a bush or what it is. It's all spread out. It's a very old mm-hmm. bush. It was here when I moved in over 25 years ago. And it just sort of, it's about 5 feet tall, and it just sort of spread out.
Yeah.
When would I prune that? And
Does it bloom? Does it just bloom once?
I think it blooms more than once.
Okay. Because the reason I ask, a lot of those old, especially the older ones, they only bloom once.
Oh.
And so they're blooming on old wood, and so you wouldn't want to prune them till after they flower. So if you're not quite sure, I think I'd probably
wait
and see when it flowers, get a better idea, and then do some. Most roses will take a pretty heavy prune and be okay.
Okay. So. One last question. Mm-hmm. I have crocuses, and they're up, and they're gorgeous. And,
oh, great.
And I was wondering, should I, they're real close together. Should I separate them in the fall?
You know, you can. Crocuses don't seem to mind it quite so much if they're a little tight in there, but you can certainly, you know, spread them out and, you know, have a bigger area. But you certainly can do that. And actually, I've done it right after they flower.
Oh.
I haven't even waited because I forget where they are. I don't know about you, but I think
right.
I know where they are, but then you just skewer them later on. And
Yeah.
So sometimes I've actually done it right after they flower.
Well, I'm going to jump in here. My apologies to the caller and one more person we can't take, but we're just going to have to stop for this time around. Sandy will be back on the program again next month. We'll do it again. And in the meantime, if you're in the coverage area of our television station, WILL-TV, there is a program that you might enjoy called Illinois Gardener. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Diane Nolan hosts the show. She has a rotating panel of garden people. Sometimes Sandy is on the show. Other people from the U of I and various greenhouses and landscaping firms around the area are on the show. And it's a live program, and you can call in and ask questions. So you might want to check that out. And, of course, in the meantime, if you have questions, and if you're in Champaign County, you can call Sandy, or if you live someplace else, you can find the extension person who is near you, and that's a resource for all of these mm-hmm. sorts of questions. They also, the extension also does have a website that you can get at through the U of I, and that also has a lot of good lawn and garden information on there, too.
And lists all the counties on there as well. So
great.
If you're trying to figure out where your county office is.
Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you.
Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.